step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Friday, January 6th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is...
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning, just even have fun playing DFS with FanDuel and DraftKings. We have optimal lineups up on our site that calculate lineups for NBA, NFL, for DraftKings, and FanDuel. You can go check those out free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, or you just head over to the site, check out the free content we have going up there every single day with value play articles, stacks for NFL, all the different kinds of stuff, hockey articles, really just everything you need to get yourself started in DFS. So go check that out, dfsr.com. I'm sure you will be pleased, surprised, not disappointed, whatever the superlative there is, that's what you'll feel. All right, buddy, Friday in the NBA. Well, first of all, rewind. Yesterday, Westbrook versus Harden did not disappoint last night. It looked like it was going to kind of be a blowout, and then Westbrook sort of just willed himself to kind of just do everything and pull them back into the game. But ultimately, the Rockets were able to just sort of hang on. It didn't look like that was going to be the case, but they were able to just sort of hang on. At this point with Westbrook, last night, he wasn't a really big start. I think it was because there was other point guard value. But where do we stand with Westbrook just in terms of, I mean, like even on a given night with his floor being so high, is he like the guy you almost like not need to play, but kind of need to play whenever he's playing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, last night certainly put that to the test. We mentioned on the podcast that Patrick Beverley and the Rockets have held opposing point guards to a bottom five total in terms of fantasy points per game, and that didn't seem to bother Westbrook too much. I mean, went out there and did his thing regardless. So it's, you know, one of those things, I guess. I think with a guy like Westbrook, we might want to be better served just looking at the overall pace of the game to inform his production rather than the opposing defender, because one thing is clear is that he's just going to go out there. I mean, in a matchup like this, to shoot the ball 34 times, which probably tells you most of what you need to know. I thought it was kind of noteworthy. His assist numbers were way down and his rebounds were way down. And I think part of that is going to be Patrick Beverley's doing, you know, like he is a good enough defender that he could probably close off passing lanes and at least make Russ work for it a little bit. But yeah, not that he's fully matchup proof, because no one can ever be, and price can always make a difference, but certainly he's the first guy you want to look at if he's on a slate.
And it's real funny too, because where game script really kind of comes into play is this game was really close to just being a blowout. I would say like another three-pointer or two from the Rockets in the third quarter, and I don't think we see Westbrook again really come back in, but then, you know, this is just kind of how things go. They're kind of able to claw back into the game. He plays 38 minutes, which is close to a season high. And anyway, so I mostly just wanted to pay homage to that game. Was pretty sick last night, and just watching those two guys play is awesome. Let's get into today's value plays for Friday. Not as big of a usual Friday slate, only 8 games going here, which isn't necessarily small, but not huge coming off a Thursday where there were a few more games than normal. At point guard, I wrote up these two guys. I think Chris Paul is going to sit again, it looks like. There's really no reason to rush him back. I mean, mostly because the Clippers have just been able to win without him and Griffin in the short term. They've won the last two. Griffin's out for a while, but Paul's kind of on that continual day-to-day sort of injury tag where kind of comes in as doubtful. You're not really sure. Felton and Rivers. So the Clippers have decided to go really small. So they've been playing Rivers, Felton, and Redick together, mm-hmm. Which seemed like a total recipe for disaster, but for some reason is working. they're playing Rivers kind of at the three, sort of in a hybrid kind of way. But do you see playing these – I mean, they're playing huge minutes. Are these guys cash game safe, even on FanDuel, pairing them together at their price? They've been playing like high 30s, even low 40s minutes.
Sure looks like it. I mean, Felton back-to-back nights on 30-plus fantasy points, back-to-back games, I should say. And Rivers, same thing. I mean, he's going out there The fantasy total has been a little bit more erratic. And Felton, we've seen this from in the past, by the way, even in a bench role. Like, I'm hearkening back to when he was on Dallas or even the Knicks. When given increased opportunity, the guy can put up some fantasy totals. So I'm not sure who I have a preference for. I mean, Rivers seems safer on the minutes alone. Scoring last game seems like an aberration to me. Yes. On some level, but they're both still cheap, so I don't see why not.
I probably would trust Felton a little bit more, only because Felton can create his points a few more ways. Rivers really does need to score. Like, he doesn't do he's a ball first point guard, but that he's not like a big assist guy in the sense that he'll get the ball at the top of the key and then he'll do 14 dribbles between his legs as he tries to break a defender down, and then the shot clock's over and he has to shoot. And so those shots were going in last game for him. I'm not trusting that that's going to always happen. So I think I would nod toward Felton just a little bit in terms of safety, but I actually think you can, in the right situation, you can probably play them together on FanDuel.
Here's a point in question, though. I mean, straight up, they're about the same price as Malcolm Brogdon. They are the exact same price as Malcolm Brogdon. Do you consider them safer than Brogdon?
No. But I only didn't mention Brogdon because I wasn't sure. I was going to mention him next because I was just not sure about Dalvadova's status.
Sure you were, buddy. Sure.
No, I know Brogdon's at the top of our...
You know him, right? He's on Milwaukee?
Okay. I'm not 100% sure about Dalvadova's status. And that was the only thing that brought that into question. No, you're correct. If Brogdon were to play, he is a better play than both of those other guys. I agree with that. The only thing is, I'm more confident, at least at 9:20 in the morning, that Paul is not going to play than Dellavedova is. But yes, Brogdon is in that same group. He's been excellent. The Bucks are kind of incentivized to keep him on the floor a lot. He doesn't need to totally play 100% point guard because of Giannis, but they just don't have a lot of other ball handlers after him. So we just need to wait on Dellavedova's status going in. Now, the thing is, too, tonight, this is where DraftKings is just much sharper with their prices. And we saw this definitely last night where the pricing on DraftKings last night was, if you look down at some of the lineups people were putting together, like we were in the chat room and I was saying, if anyone's feeling confident with a DraftKings lineup, like across the whole industry, like I just need to actually like have a physical conversation with them, like call them up on the phone and just ask why. Because
just book them on a flight and have them come out.
100%, just to know where their confidence comes from, because the pricing in DraftKings is so sharp and there's so little wiggle room in terms of just putting lineups together, that because they price correct quicker for some of these guys and new opportunities. You know, Austin Rivers' price is already up significantly over his DraftKings or his FanDuel price, Brogdon as well. So these plays don't necessarily 100% transfer over to DraftKings simply because those guys just price correct a little bit quicker. After those three guys, those are the three value plays. I also wrote up John Wall. Wall is the matchup against Minnesota is good in the sense that Minnesota is not a great defensive team. They don't play particularly fast. Wall, he's just so much time on ball, right? Like I think he's first in the league first in the league of qualified guys, like guys that actually play.
I think he's behind Harden and Westbrook, but yeah, he's right there after those guys.
Is he? Okay, I'm going to go look that up because I thought I saw something different. Okay, it doesn't matter. Either way, he's at the very tippy top of this mountain of just guys who control the ball. Do you think it's worth it to pay up for a guy like him if we have these other guys sort of existing around this like sort of lower tier value, but Wall just maybe is just a safer, maybe just a much better player? So I'm just not sure where the price kind of outstrips like, you know, what value you're getting on the lower end.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, the thing about these particular types of punts, if you even want to call them that, these cheap value guys at this point, is that they're just so good on a points per dollar basis that it's not like it wouldn't be the first place I would look to want to spend up, right? Because
right.
This is kind of the exact dream scenario you're looking for is a guy under 5,000 who, you know, is a $5,000 plus player who puts up the numbers really reliably. I'm looking at Brogdon in particular here, but I think even Felton to a lesser degree. And like I could be talked into it over Felton perhaps just because he does have a few stinkers on this opportunity, but definitely not over Brogdon. So would I be shocked if Wall wound making his way into the lineups in the long run? Probably not. Given that it's roughly a league average matchup with Minnesota, I also wouldn't feel the need to jam him in there necessarily.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. It's not a perfect matchup. I think Wall just typically is a pretty high floor guy. He's been taking more shots of late, and even with Beal back, like they're sort of transferring the power of the offense over to him. Mostly he can just be trusted more. Beal's just not a very safe commodity at this point. I think people will also possibly talk themselves into Dragic. I'm a little worried on Dragic, not because of the matchup. The matchup against the Lakers is great. We saw what Lillard kind of hadn't played at all for a couple weeks, and last night just came back and just torched the Lakers because Lakers really struggle in backcourt defense. But you know, I can see people talking to themselves in the Dragic. My only concern with Dragic is as the Heat get healthier, which they are getting healthier now, not with Whiteside, but really, and not with Winslow, but those guys don't affect Dragic too much.
No, the wing guys.
Right, exactly. The backcourt and wing guys are getting healthier. I'm a little worried that he's really not a 35-minute per game guy. He only played 30 in a close game last night. Right now I have his minutes at 35, so but I can see it, that number would only go down for me as I looked at it more. What do you think about Dragic?
Yeah, I think on a minutes level, it's can be informative here to look at the early season to see what he was playing back then. And 34 to 35 was typically the number, I mean, unless a game got out of hand or, you know, he left a game with injury or whatever. But yeah, I think 34 to 35 is pretty reasonable. I think, you know, perhaps more to the point almost is how those guys impact his usage. And while they make a difference, he's still clearly the main ball handler there. Like, actually, it's funny, his return just crushes them more than their return crushes him because he's the first option. So like Josh Richardson
right.
is just throwing his hands up in disgust when he sees Goran suiting up. He's like, no suit tonight, buddy. That's great. No, it's so good that you're going to play.
They're going my shots.
Looking forward to that.
Well, especially down to like Ellington and Magruder. Cause those guys are done. Oh, yeah. Like those guys were values and that's kind of that's over now.
Yeah, they split that pie up pretty nice when Dragic is out of the game. But when he's in there, it's just hard for any of them to get going. So, I wouldn't mind Dragic, I guess, a long story short. I do wonder, though, there's typically this class of guy who's like, you know, a good price, decent value, but just not where you want to be. And that as of this podcast, that's kind of where I picture Dragic, unless those punts all go away.
Yeah, we just get a lot of value at point guard again tonight. Yeah. So that's really more of it. It's like an embarrassment of riches more than it's just a, you know, trial by choice. So I think that we're going to end up probably being able to just save a little bit of the position. At shooting guard, you know, Harden clearly tops the list. That's not in question at all here. But in terms of just raw points, where do you see so he played a ton of minutes last night in a pretty high leverage game. It's a back-to-back tonight against a bad Orlando team. How do you think that affects Harden's? Like, how much do we downgrade Harden's minutes at all because of what just having logged so many last night?
I mean, it's tricky with a guy like Harden because he's so fundamental to his team's success that they haven't often had the luxury of resting his minutes, like compared to a guy like LeBron, you know, for instance, who just goes out there and plays fewer minutes from time to time because he has actual other good players on the team.
Right.
Harden, so just in terms of recent game logs, played 42 minutes against the Knicks in the second half of a back-to-back. You go back and there's some blowouts on the schedule. It's kind of hard to gather. Actually every other back-to-back he's played this season has resulted in a blowout where they blew out the other team.
Sure.
So they've reduced minutes, but I don't think – like I could actually see this being one of those situations where people look at this and they're like, oh, yeah, don't play Harden on the second half of back-to-back as minutes go down. Okay, here's another one. Played against Minnesota after New Orleans game, played 43 minutes. So sure. That doesn't seem to be anything there.
Yeah, no, and the line isn't actually as high as I thought it would be. It's only Houston -5, so Vegas is not necessarily just thinking this is going to be a blowout either. I'm not exactly sure why, because Orlando feels like they stink, but
maybe they think Harden will play less minutes. I don't know.
That could be. I can't think of many other reasons except, I mean, it's in Orlando. You do get home bumps, so to be, you know, a favorite even on the road probably means the true line is closer to like 8 or 9. But I can see people talking themselves out of Harden for that reason. I'm not sure. It's going to be close because the other guy that you can also pay up for at the position is Giannis. Giannis goes against the Knicks. This is the second half of a home and home because they played the Knicks the other night where he hit a pretty sick buzzer beater, which if you haven't seen this buzzer beater, it's worth it to go look up because basically they had 9 seconds left. They gave the ball to him in the post, and it was just so clear what he was going to do. And where a lot of other guys like this will drive, like, you know, a lot of other point guard types, quote unquote, will drive the basket to kind of either try to get fouled or kind of get a ball near the thing. He just kind of backed, maybe it was Melo. He just backed his defender down and then just took the longest fadeaway that no one could ever block, sort of like that Dirk fadeaway that no one could ever block because he was so tall, and just sank it to win the game. So anyway, not really DFS relevant, but worth it in the sense that, like, this guy is just putting himself into that next category of just elite players where he was already sort of getting there, but now he's just also like the man too, right? Like, it's one thing to sort of just be a fantasy sort of god. It's another thing to just being like, you know, stone cold near the end of games and just be able to hit those last shots. So anyway, he gets to face the Knicks again. Do you think people look at that last game against the Knicks where he kind of crushed them and just sort of transpose that same performance onto tonight and just, you know, is he just a safe cash game play here?
I think so. I mean, and it's not like the game against the Knicks was out of bounds necessarily. I mean, 54 fantasy points for him, while perhaps slightly above his season average, is not like anything remarkable. He had a four-game stretch just last month where he put up that total or better in, you know, in each of those four games. Scored 70 points against Chicago. So, yeah, I do think the floor is quite considerable. You know, he's a guy, we've talked about him, but he's not your typical guy who you can just look and be like, oh, it's like, who's a good example of this? Oh, it's Dwayne Wade. You know, he's a shooting guard. So the opposing team's stats against shooting guards will really inform how he plays. Like, Giannis is just an O position, kind of. Like, like Carmelo Anthony would never guard another point guard, for instance. But he guards Giannis sometimes. So you really have to go on a team-by-team basis. And if we have evidence that he's killed this particular team, you know, Melo not really a stout defender, at least as far as his reputation goes. So, sure, looks like a very reasonable play. It's actually going to be tricky. I mean, again, there's a lot of good value at the position, or I should say there's a lot of good big money value at the same position, and it's often very tough to spend up twice at the same spot. So I'm not exactly sure where the optimal lineup winds up tonight, but yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on, because that would be a way to get some separation potentially, is jamming both of those guys, but who knows.
You know, we mentioned Felton and Rivers. I think Redick, you know, also Redick too, just in that starting lineup. Redick falls into that value category. He's playing tons of minutes, way, way more minutes than he plays when their big guys are back, because they just kind of rotate him on shorter rotations when they have everyone there. But he played a ton of minutes last game, took a ton of shots, got to the line a lot, which is pretty big for him, because that's just basically free points if he's able to get fouled. So some of that was sort of late game stuff, but Redick still coming cheap, only 4,400 on FanDuel. Do you think he ends up just kind of slotting in there as just a price-saving move at a position where, outside of Giannis and Harden, there's not tons of just great value?
I think so. I like that he can go out there and, you know, up his shots, I think, is a key thing to look in on here. So 13 and 14 shots in the last two games, considerably up from his season average, like when those other guys are all healthy. You know, it's a little tricky because so many guys have missed time there, but you know, I guess you'll have to trust me that when those guys are off the floor, he gets more shots in the air. He's also just playing great minutes. Like, normally the Clips like to have him around 29 or 30 minutes a game. 37 and 34 in the last two games speaks to probably a 10 to 15% increase in opportunity, and that makes a huge difference on a $4,400 salary point. So, yeah, I could absolutely see him being a guy you just throw in there to, you know, spend up elsewhere, because, again, like we talked about with point guard, even when there's good options here, we also just want to escape having to play bad options elsewhere. So, yeah, he enables that almost on his own.
I can also see, and I probably should have mentioned him in point guard, but I can see people talking themselves into the Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley camp against the Sixers today. Sixers are just not as good of a fantasy matchup as they've been in the past. They're still good. It's still worth it to target guys. Those guys, though, they have had some price increases, Thomas especially. He's up over 9,000 now. It gets a little dicey for him at that price point. So, well, yes, I understand he's been great. I'm just a little bit worried about just trotting him out there on, you know, John Wall type salaries. That's my concern with him. And I can see people talking themselves into Bradley as well. All right, on the small forward, I'm not exactly sure of the status of all the Cleveland guys right now. If I had a guess, my guess would be Love does not play, Irving does play, but that's totally a guess. They are playing Brooklyn tonight. There's no line on it, which means Vegas is not sure either about necessarily who's playing. The one guy we can count on playing, though, is LeBron. How much do you – now, LeBron clearly is a different guy depending on personnel, in the sense that the team is just a different team based on personnel. Where do we look at LeBron? As of right now, let's say Irving plays, Love doesn't, okay? Where do we see LeBron sort of coming in against a Brooklyn team that is just fantasy gold when you're targeting guys? I mean, as we saw last night with the Pacers, and so I have seen every other time that they've taken the court this season. Where do we see a team like LeBron, or a guy like LeBron against that kind of team?
Well, I think before we get into LeBron, I have to, first of all, shame you for not standing up for me on Twitter when someone sent us a mocking tweet saying, hey guys, Miles, this is my impersonation of our friend at Brock Hop. Thanks for the tweet, Brock Hop. We like you, buddy. But hey guys, nice call on Turner. He's on pace for a transcendent performance. And then you have the opportunity to stand up for your lifelong friend, known you 20 years. You can go in there and say, hey man, James, that was a good call by James. It didn't get there, but there's variance. Instead you say, James didn't speak for all of us, wink face. That's my impression of you. And then, of course, Turner goes on, absolutely slams it in your and in Brock Hobbs' face. So good job by you guys for selling me out. Anyway,
After that, I reversed course and said he did speak for all of us.
Yeah, like the weasel you are, you tried to drag me out from under the bus, but my spine was crushed. And
I will throw absolutely anybody under the bus. I do not care.
The thing is, too, you know I don't check the Twitter very much. So you were trying to weasel your way out of it. And hope
I told you about it this morning. And by the way, I didn't get to my station of life by just like agreeing with everyone. I throw everyone and anybody under the bus when given the opportunity. LeBron James, go.
That's your station. Okay. So when it comes to LeBron, I mean, this is there's so many factors in play here that it probably merits just a little bit of a deeper dive, because this is a situation that just comes up in DFS frequently, which is, first of all, trying to balance a good play with blowout risk. That's the place where we can begin here. No line from Vegas. It's kind of a cop-out for me.
Right.
From them, like I think that we could at least establish some kind of range. I think the range for this game would be something like, I don't know, minus 13 to minus 16, which is to say all of this is heavily in blowout range here, regardless of whether Kevin Love plays or not. So right away, we're going to be taking on considerable blowout risk by playing any players in this game. The last time these two teams faced, LeBron only put up 39 fantasy points. So that would be a very bad performance, especially given what we're used to from superstars on their price points at this point in the DFS life cycle. So let's get that out of the way first. Like, there's definitely a considerable amount of risk here. On the same token, LeBron, not normally a guy who you think of as a huge upside guy. He's more of a guy who just kind of goes out there and you can dial him in for 4.5 to maybe 5.5x, depending on how things break. But if Love is going to miss this game and it's an insane matchup, there's just some chance. Like, Brooklyn runs hot from three and LeBron decides to just rip these guys' throats out, either by assists or by points. I mean, you know, he does touch these 70-plus point games from time to time in that kind of exact scenario. Like, great situation, team that they should beat badly, but they managed to hang in. So I think there's upside there for cash game purposes. If Love plays, I think that might be the straw that broke the camel's back for me, to where I would probably pivot off of LeBron. But if LeBron's out, I think that if they're going to blow him out, who else causes the blowout but LeBron? So I would be comfortable playing him in that spot.
And
hopefully
Brooklyn,
that's not too much of an answer for you.
Brooklyn can do that. They did it last night, where they're getting blown out and they just start hitting threes and are able to come.
Yeah, they got some super, sure.
Right, they're able to pull themselves back to the game with the Pacers before ultimately, again, losing. But I think that Brooklyn's just so bad. They cannot play any defense, and I kind of think that LeBron at 10,000 on FanDuel is just safe enough no matter what the scenario is. It's really close. This would be one of the edge decisions that will kind of come down closer to lock as we know what's going on. Typically, though, like, we don't have any queries in for him as with anyone off the court, I don't think, right now, and he's still showing up. So that leads me to believe that he's probably going to be there anyway. The only thing that would probably reduce him is if we reduce the minutes based on blowout. After him, looks like Porzingis is going to be back, which does affect Melo, but Melo's still coming cheap, still under 8,000. How much does Porzingis coming back tonight, which I think he will, affect just our projection on Melo and his usage in minutes and whatnot?
Pretty dramatically. I mean, Porzingis this season has really moved into, I mean, it's hard to call him the alpha dog. That's kind of just a stupid term in general.
Right.
Probably doesn't apply here. Melo's probably still like the leader of the team or whatever. But Porzingis has really chewed into everyone's usage. I mean, he went from shooting 12 shots a game last season up to 16 this year. And four shots might not sound like much, but in a game that just comes down to these razor thin edges where lineups are typically separated by a fraction of a point, like our top overall lineup and our second overall lineup will frequently be like three players different and 0.2 points away. So I think that could be enough to kind of get Melo out of the picture.
No, I think I probably agree with that. And I think if Porzingis were to not play, I think Melo's a chalk guy. But if I think it's pretty easy to talk yourself out of him if they're kind of at full strength, just for the reasons you mentioned. Some cheaper guys you can consider, or mid-tier guys. I don't mind Jay Crowder actually against the Sixers. Sixers have struggled against the small forward position this year. Crowder's minutes are stabilizing a little bit. He doesn't have a ton of upside simply because he's just not really their first or second option on offense. He might not be their third option on offense with that starting five. So he doesn't have tremendous upside at this 5,300 price on FanDuel. But I do think he has a nice floor in a game against the Sixers, which does project where the Celtics do project to put up points. And he's actually one of the guys, like, unlike Bradley maybe, and definitely unlike Thomas, his price hasn't gone crazy just with the matchup. The other guy too, Matt Barnes, coming pretty cheap, only 3,800 on FanDuel. He's been playing minutes around 30. Kings are a tough nut to crack in terms of like what their plan is, mostly because they also stink. They're brutal. I watched them the other night, and it's just such a shame. Look, Boogie's a head case, and I get that part of it, but it's easier to be a head case when you're staring at like the personnel around you and wondering like how you'll ever possibly win a game with these guys. And so like guys like Matt Barnes and Garrett Temple and Kosta Koufos, like, and the list goes on. Like, those are their better players. So,
well, it can't help, right? Like, when you're already maybe a little crazy and right. Those are your teammates. Yeah, I'm with it.
But Barnes, if you think Barnes is going to play 30 minutes, then he actually is a way that you can start fitting in, like, more expensive value, like getting Harden and Giannis in together at shooting guard. So if you're not in love with LeBron and you think Melo's usage just gets cut into, going cheap with Barnes is not maybe the worst thing in the world. At power forward, you know, it's one of those things where there's a group, maybe there's like two or three guys I don't feel terrible about, and then the rest of the list gets real ugly real fast. Jabari Parker was a pretty chalk start the other night against the Knicks. Played a lot of minutes, but ultimately disappointed.
Blew it.
He kind of disappointed on his price. But I do you feel, you know, looking at the same, going back to the same exact matchup here, minutes expectation is pretty good. Can you see going back to Parker again tonight against the Knicks?
Absolutely. We have a couple of bad games in a row here. This is something I was trying to explain to people in chat actually a couple of days ago, because, you know, it's very normal. Whenever you're doing anything that involves variance, it's very hard to wrap your mind around the types of events that can happen or the types of ways things can cluster from time to time. And while playing basketball game is not a random event like flipping a coin, like there's obviously a lot of contextual factors that impact things here. But so say a guy like Parker, he's averaged 32 fantasy points a game this season, right? Like that's been his average in relatively steady minutes. And he's facing a team like the Knicks, who are about league average against power forwards. It stands to reason then that he will score something like 32 fantasy points per game. So when he goes out there and just completely stinks it up on above average minutes for his minutes for the season, then I think you can just look at that and say, well, that looks like an aberration, right? So reversing the train just a little bit here, if Parker's played 33 minutes on average this season and played 37 minutes in that game, then he's just not going to frequently score 7 fewer points on 4 more minutes, right? So this is a very long-winded way of saying variance is a bitch, man. Get over it. It's DFS. Just play the guy again. Don't talk yourself into a worse play because you got bit once.
Yeah, no, and that's a trouble people have. People really struggle with that.
It makes DFS hard, frankly.
Look, I struggle with it too, and we have numbers to back it up. Your brain just works in a way. I don't think I struggle with it like in the same way that, you know, some others do. So, but there are things that will stick in my mind, good and bad, about how players have performed, like especially when I've had my eye on them. And but I've you know, had to have gotten better about that over the years, and think I have. And Parker's an example of, yeah, burn me once, but it's just fine. This is still a good matchup. After Parker, you know, Julius Randle was a guy we wrote up last night and played. I had mentioned some of my concern over his minutes, and that just didn't end up being the case. He played 37 again last night. Partly helped because Luol Deng sat. So that, you know, when Deng sits, they do run out of sort of guys that can kind of fit that sort of, you know, versatile power forward type player. Is Randle a guy, like, so in the last three games, 36, 37, 37 minutes, is that just a new norm for him? Or on the back-to-back, can you see it kind of maybe dipping back down some against the Heat?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things in play here, right? The first is that the Heat are just not a terrific matchup. So, you know, right away, we're not going to be thrilled to roster guys against the Heat. But on the same token, when you're getting a guy, I mean, this is similar to the Parker situation. The major difference being that Randle's uptick in minutes is more frequent, or more recent, rather, to say the right thing instead of the wrong thing. So when you're getting that big of a minutes bump, guys can fall into this realm of being kind of matchup proof. Randle certainly puts that to the test here tonight, but not a guy I would be terrified to roster necessarily. I mean, he's clearly, they view him as the future of the franchise. He's the only guy that gets to play these kind of minutes for them. So I could see this being kind of a permanent direction for them.
It was funny last night during that game. The Lakers came out slow in the second half, and at the 10-minute mark, so 2 minutes into the third quarter, Walton just did like the tilt hockey line change where he just where four
gets me every time.
Four guys just stood up. I was so pissed because we had Russell and Randall on DraftKings and we were having a fantastic night, like sort of like creeping toward the top of GPPs with those two guys going, and then I just see the four guys stand up from the Lakers and start walking down to the check-in table, and I'm like, oh god, just have one of these guys like not be, because there's only four of them, and then it ended up being Ingram that stayed on the court. So
a little Russian roulette.
But it's funny though, even with that, right, it really was, but even with that move, right? Even with that move, Russell and Randall still played 35 and 37 minutes. So it was kind of just like a more of a wake-up call, because then they put them back in and they just played out the rest of the game in crunch time. I'm a little less worried about the Heat with no Whiteside. Whiteside's good, but it does slow down their pace a little bit. So while not a great matchup, losing an elite rim protector like him does sort of shift the balance of power off of the Heat. So that's the only thing.
Whiteside an excellent help defender too, and that'll help.
Right.
That'll hurt an inexperienced player like Randall more so than some others too. So yeah, that's a good point.
So that's where I could see going back to Randall. I still am just a little bit worried about the minutes. Like Walton just is just enough of a guy that just will not, like the fact that like no few other coaches are going to pull that kind of coaching move, you know, like at the beginning of a thing, and just there was some chance that they just never come back in. So that's my only little concern with a guy like him. I think I also wrote up Georgie Deng. I mean, it's a day ending in Y, and the Timberwolves are playing, so Georgie Deng gets a write up. Where do you think? I mean, Deng at this point, what do we do with a guy like Deng? He didn't play crunch time minutes for the Timberwolves the other night. I want to think that that's like, you know, sort of an outlier, but just not totally sure because the minutes took a tumble. What do we do with a situation like that?
I think you lock him in for 28.8 fantasy points because that's what he scored exactly in his last two games. So what could be safer than Georgie Deng on 5,600? I mean, Deng is one of these guys. He'll just drive you absolutely to drink because he flashes like, well, when he's out there, like if you're ever watching Georgie Deng, when he's out there and things are rolling, you're like, how does this guy not score 50 fantasy points a game? Like he gets every rebound. He's like a good offensive player. This guy's great.
Like, he can knock down like the mid-range jumper off the pick and roll. I mean. Like he was like, he was crushing them the other night. He was crushing the Sixers the other night on these like short, like mid-range pick and pops, and just every single time. And then they stopped doing it, and then he didn't play again. And I'm like,
well, you're like, yeah, this guy's like a mix of like LaMarcus Aldridge, but he's got like kind of like a Hassan Whiteside's block upside. Like that's how I feel about Deng when he's really going. And then he's like, and 27 minutes for you, my friend. Back to the bench. I think, you know, just the simple existence of Karl Anthony Towns really hurts Deng, because I think if we're being honest, like they're kind of just playing two centers because they run out of good players at some point. And that's just really hard to do, right? In the modern NBA, especially like, I mean, I think you can take the last game as a reasonable example of this. You know, when you're trying to run out two centers and the opposing team doesn't play two centers, it just gets tough, right? Like Philly's been, you know, when they don't play Embiid and Okafor at the same time, like they just don't play another guy that is a good person for Deng to cover. So it's kind of a weird, just a weird situation there. But free Georgie Deng, man. I'd like to see him on a team where we could get some sick value from him in the future, but I'm just not sure it's like we're ever going to feel safe with him in Minnesota.
Yeah, Washington does present some matchup problems there because they can go small with Markieff Morris, who, I mean, he was another guy I wrote up, the guy, another just sort of minutes disaster in the sense that you just don't know what he's going to play. He has foul trouble issues. Doesn't seem like any coach has ever wanted to really coach him or actually play him. But
yeah, sometimes he shoots 23 shots in a game.
Well, it's amazing. I actually wrote that. I was like, what's amazing is sometimes it doesn't even matter how much he plays because he's like, I'm just getting mine, son. Like, I'm going to get double digit shots here. I can play 20 minutes. And if it looks like I'm coming out, I'm getting some more shots up because I got to hit these double digits. Like he's actually probably the most tilting player to watch, just in terms of when you've rostered him. But that's driven his price down. Like the variability around his performance has driven the price down to under 5,000 on FanDuel. The Timberwolves are just not they have those two big guys there. They're just still not a very good defensive team. So I think there's some case to be made for Morris.
Yeah, there is. I think if I had a gun in my head, I'd just choose Deng over Morris. I actually think the safety is higher on Deng than Morris, even on the reduced price.
I agree.
Deng's price is reduced too. It's only 700 more. So yeah, I'd probably lean in that direction personally.
Center's a little tough tonight. They're you can pay all the way up for a guy like Boogie, but the matchup is just not good against the Clippers with DeAndre Jordan. Clippers still are playing at a slower pace even without Paul. I don't think paying all the 11,000 for him is necessarily the way to go on FanDuel, but there are a couple cheaper guys in this mid-range. Their prices have crept up. I'm wondering your thoughts on, and they both have little asterisks next to them because I'm wondering how much this affects what we think of these guys. So the two guys are Joakim Noah And the asterisk next to him is that Porzingis is coming back. And the other one is Greg Monroe, and the asterisk next to him is he still comes off the bench. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on those guys?
I think if I had to choose one, I would just choose Noah. Yeah, I do think that there's a minutes reduction coming, and when that coincides with an increase in price, like it certainly felt better playing Noah at 4,500 with no Porzingis than it will be playing Noah at 5,100 with Porzingis. But I think it's one of these situations where, listen, Noah's not going to go back down to 12 to 14 minutes a game. So simply taking his fantasy points per game on the season is not a reasonable proxy at all for him. I think he'll probably settle back into like a 28 to 29 minute rotation. And so while that dings him a little bit, it makes him less than just like a truly elite, you know, pencil him in for 6x plus points per dollar play like he has been. You know, some good things don't last forever sometimes, right? And I think on a bad night for center, gritting our teeth and bearing it, I think this is another case where you can let your emotions get the better of you, right? Where you're like, it's not as good a deal anymore, and you kind of feel like you missed out on something, so you don't wind up playing him. But yeah, Noah just under a fantasy point minute or a fantasy point per minute guy this season. So if he plays 28 minutes, he pays his price going away.
And what about Monroe coming off the bench?
Yeah, Monroe is a guy, like you and I have disagreed a little bit on him. You know, my general way I approach DFS is just to try to never play guys off the bench for my cash games. Those guys tend to be a lot more at risk for minutes reductions than some other guys. I think Monroe is a fine example of that, frankly. Like, he's on this great three-game stretch. The game before that, he played 14 minutes against Minnesota. Then he played 27 against Detroit, but then 22, 21, 18, 18 before that. So if you trust the basically two of the last three games more than you trust the track record leading up to it, I guess I can see it. But, man, I just don't know if it's for me.
I have the same worry, mostly just at this price point, right? When it was 4,900 and you kind of just could maybe guess that he was going to get 25 minutes off the bench, it's a little different playing him at, you know, the risk of him playing 25 minutes at 5,500 on DraftKings or on FanDuel is probably a little more than I can bear. That being said, he's really high in our system in terms of points per dollar. Like, if you thought he was going to get 29 minutes again, then he would almost, like, if you just knew it, like, if he just, if, even if they made the change, like I said, he's going to start. I don't think they're going to do that. But if he was going to start, I think, because it's not even like coming off the second unit is where he gets his big production. Like, he was fine. He played crunch time minute. The reason he played 30 minutes last game is because he played crunch time. Like, he was down there, down and late. So I just wish they would either make the call or issue a press release and say his minutes are safe. Like, that would actually be, that's actually the thing I'm
looking
for.
Wouldn't it be nice, like, in the future, when DFS is just like a cultural staple and all the coaches that are coaching play DFS as young people, you think they'll tell us that stuff like that, right? Like, could there be a bigger lack of empathy than just like not letting us know how many minutes a guy's going to play? It doesn't help the other team. They don't care if you're going to play Greg Monroe or not, you know?
The minutes thing is like really stuck in my car right now because in the short term, we've had like five really clear examples of just total head scratching minutes problems that have just really affected lineups. Yep. So the minutes thing I'm stuck on it right now. Embiid, speaking of minutes, Embiid is still at a 29 minute cap, but the price 7,200. Boston, I mean, they're okay-ish against centers with Horford, but Embiid is just such a crazy fantasy commodity. In the last two games, 42 and 42 fantasy points on 28 and 29 minutes. Is it still worth it to pay up for him even plus 7,000?
It could be. The Celtics still do play fast. And, you know, Embiid is one of these guys. Not that he's like Westbrook on a skill level or on a fantasy level, but the way he is comparable is that he's just not a common matchup, so you can't just like look at the stock thing. Like, I think you have to break it down more on an actual player basis. That said, Horford's just an excellent post defender, and there aren't a lot of those in the NBA right now. So I think that dings him a little bit more than typically I would assume in a situation like this. The big question I have for Embiid tonight is that around this illness question. So like, yeah, right now he's listed as questionable, and it's not totally clear if he's going to play at all. But even if he does, the Sixers have been so cautious with his minutes that I wonder if, you know, with a guy who scores so many fantasy points per minute, losing 3 minutes is a huge deal. So I'm not sure that that's where I'll want to wind up for cash games.
No, I didn't realize his tum-tum was hurting or whatever he's getting.
But look at this. It's not even 10 a.m. and you learned something today.
I did.
A lot of belly aches going around the NBA right now. Have you noticed this?
It's just so funny. I was talking to someone in the chat room the other day, like, NBA players get sick a lot. I was like, welcome to the NBA, my friend. This is something you learn real fast. The NBA flu is a very real thing. And I look, I'm not saying all these guys aren't sick. These guys are in close quarters and banging up their bodies against each other, so it makes sense that germs are passed.
That sounds real normal.
Well, how would you describe basketball?
Yeah, a bunch of guys. All these guys were together. We were banging our bodies together. Some of us got sick.
I mean, personally, to an alien coming down from space, I think that's an absolutely perfect description of what basketball is.
Everyone's watching. Yeah.
Anyway, I guess I suppose if Embiid were to sit, Okafor and Noel probably get significant bumps in terms of just their minutes expectation. Okafor only played 10 minutes last game. So, again, what are the Sixers doing? Not totally sure. All right, that's it for us today. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go on over, check out a free 3-day trial to the projection system that was informing all the scintillating conversation that you experienced and listened to today. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Also includes NFL projections as well, so you're good to go through the playoffs when you sign up there. Go check it out, DFSR.com/membership. Buddy, we'll be back again next week talking some basketball.
All right, man. Can't wait.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.